going on, everybody? I'd like to welcome y'all back to Sync Music Mondays. That's right, Sync Music Mondays every Monday, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Y'all know the vibes, man. Music licensing in the coolest form because we are the coolest. Financial literacy for your music, teaching musicians how to monetize their music, and also bringing on some of the latest and greatest in this field known as music licensing. And, you know, it's just dope to listen to all the comments and all the feedback that we get. Shout out to all the listeners in Lithuania, Nigeria, Canada, Paris, Egypt, everybody. We get the stats. We know where you're listening. Shout out to y'all. We appreciate y'all. And as always, we're going to start off with the word of the day, something motivational, inspirational to get y'all through y'all week. And today's word of the day is simple. I love it. It's called separation is equivalent to elevation. I'll say that again. Separation is equivalent to elevation. A lot of times in life, sometimes we have to learn how to separate from toxic people, toxic situations, toxic conversations in order to elevate and become the best version of ourselves. Doesn't necessarily mean that you think you're better than people, because it's never about arrogance or being cocky. It's just understanding the fundamental difference between trying to get to where you have to go as opposed to where you presently are, right? So, you know, sometimes, like I always say, it's like a rocket ship. The rocket goes up. It's got to let go of some of that baggage to get to where it's got to go. You are that rocket. Your life is that rocket. Your dreams are that rocket. Your motivation is that rocket. So just kind of just keep that in mind as you navigate throughout life. And that is the word of the day. All right. But for today, we have a really, really, really dynamic, dope, special guest today, man. This guy, man, he's phenomenal, man. He is, because, you know, it's so dope and so accomplished, I gotta actually look at it because it's so much, you know what I'm saying? So he is an award-winning musician, music producer, composer, songwriter, singer. All right, he's worked with labels like Epic, game developers like Activision, movie studios from Apple, Original Films, Warner Brothers, over two decades. Y'all know how long is two decades? That's a long time. All right, that's a long time. All right, it's been licensed video games all over, man. I mean, trailers, Martin Scorsese's, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff coming, man. I mean, I can't even run it down because we're not going to do that. We're going to let him do that. Shout out to my brother, Brent Daniels. Brent, what's up, brother?
Hey, man. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm absolutely honored.
Look, man, we happy to have you, brother. Thank you for being on today. You know, as you know, this show is for musicians, educating them in regards to just financial literacy for their music. Of course, music licensing, because that's what a lot of artists want to know about. So I kind of gave like a broad view of you. But for the people that might not necessarily be familiar with you, could you tell them in your own words, who is Brent Daniels?
Well, I'm a composer and music producer. Sound designer too, although I don't really kind of pitch myself that way because people kind of pigeonhole you then. But my background was being, I guess what you'd say it started for me working in the industry. I got signed in the late 90s, early 2000s to a large indie label. I think it was the biggest at the time in the US, TVT Records in New York. Okay. And from that experience, I learned a lot about music licensing. And so as a keyboard player and a singer and a songwriter, it's kind of doing like a dark pop thing, I guess, at that time. I mean, we weren't calling it that back then, but I guess that's what you'd call it now. A lot of cinematic kind of vibes going on. And, you know, sound design is a big part of that. So, and I guess I'm only making that distinction because the lane that I'm kind of working in right now and have been for about the last 6 years in the trailer music world, sound design is a big part of that process. So when you say sound design, you're very specifically also talking about like not just doing cool sonics in a track, but like literally like sound design. Like,
right.
You know, so yeah, so... That was a long answer. That was very convoluted.
It's all good,
sound design.
Man.
Who cares? It's sound design.
It's all good. It's all
but,
good.
Yeah, so that was my start. Getting that kind of, you know, it's funny, working on my first record with that label, one of the coolest things about it, probably the coolest thing, I think, and probably the best thing to come out of that experience was was learning about licensing. The fact that I could, and I was young, and so I was very, very green. I didn't know what time it was. And I didn't know that every song on that record could be licensed into something. And I had signed a publishing deal with the label. And I'm glad I did that because they licensed every track from that record into different movies and TV shows.
Wow.
And at the time it was like, what? What did you just do? That's my song in a movie. And I would like more of that, please. And so that kind of kicked off the interest for me in writing music specifically for sync licensing. Now, it turned out that my thing that I really, at least nowadays, really love doing is doing music for trailers. And in order to kind of kick that door in that side of the industry, I really had to let go of working on anything else that I wanted to do musically, which is okay because I love the style. I don't think I'll do it forever, but for now, the reason I started to do it was because for me, at least the way I approach writing tracks is that, you know, you're looking at after you're recording, you know, recording the track and then singing it and then doing 24 BVs and then mixing it. Oh, then you had to write the lyrics. You know, 100 hours, whatever, 120 hours or something. And it's like the ROI on that turnaround time and then to get it placed. And then to see at the time, for me, it was like, it seems like they're paying less money for you know, dropping a track into a show. So I was like, I'm actually going to pivot to where the money is now for the moment. And I think that's actually shifted from that time. Now there's like a lot of money in sync again. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was working with the wrong sync agents. That could be too. But for me, it was like, go where the money is and also where, because, you know, it's marketing money for trailers. So go where the money is, but also this looks fun. And it turned out that it was really, really enjoyable for me. So someone that really grew up listening to like Nine Inch Nails and Depeche Mode and really like, not just, you know, loving like a Depeche Mode record, but like loving the engineer and the producer behind it, like Flood on Violator or something, you know, and really just being fans of those types of creators and artists. I'm always looking at the producer more than the artist or the keyboard player or similar. And, you know, coming from that kind of view on things, that's really why I think the music that I make was already sounding kind of cinematic. And so the kind of the pivot into trailers just made sense anyway. Because I was already writing like dark pop songs that had these long intros and moody stuff. And by the way, if you're making heavy, dark music, generally speaking, it's kind of harder to sync. If you want to make a lot of money in sync, here's some advice for people. Don't write just dark music. It looks really hard to just like to like license an entire metal record, for example. Mm-hmm. I love metal, but it's you're not gonna get an Amex commercial, you know, probably.
Facts. That's a major key, Brent. And you know, I think that's a major gem for artists too. It's like, be open-minded, you know, like don't be so hostage to what you want to do. Sometimes you got to step outside your comfort zone. So like you said, it's like, keep that in mind, because yeah, certain songs just won't work for certain type of sync opportunities. So yeah, you might like it, and your grandmama might like it, your mama might like it, but you ain't gonna make no money. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
So,
or yeah. you might like it, you might love it. Like, I mean I get it now. I get how things work. A lot of people like heavy music, but if you're trying to sell something, you know, it's easier to sell it to a first of all, you want to sell it to a larger audience, and most people, you know, want a little bit of sunshine with their product and not so much angst. But if you're working in trailers, you can bring the angst all day. I mean, there's kind of this running joke in the trailer lane of sync, both from mostly from the music supervisors in the trailer world, and also from the composers. Although the composers will jump on any trend as long as the thing's getting placed, they don't care. I mean, I don't really care as long as the track I worked on that I spent that time doing gets placed. But the music supervisors have been saying for years on the trailer side, they've been saying, please stop with the dark pop covers. Please stop with the dark reimaginings of, you know, X, Y, or Z song. But it's not stopping because it just keeps happening. It's been going on for, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
There's a reason. It happens to work in the cinematic lane. Like, it just does.
It's so true.
You can say you're sick of it, but you're still going to hear it because it works. There's certain tropes that work, you know, especially in trailers, you know, both from some of the sounds, even though that can shift because it's, you know, it's advertising, so it's very trendy. But there's certain things that they're always going to hit in a track or be required or expected by the editor, the person cutting the trailer, and or the music supervisor who picked the track or who wrote the brief looking for a certain kind of sound. And, you know, that is stuff like the structure of the track, you know, risers and drops or whatever. But, you know, every style has that. EDM's got a riser every 8 bars, you know, enough with the risers. It's EDM, what do you want? That's like saying, no 808s in trap. What?
Yeah, real that's now? A fact. That's a fact.
As a but whole so thing. Yeah, dark pop songs, fine. It's like that's a thing. So if you're writing dark music, hey, head over to the trailer world. But just don't put any work, any words in it. They probably don't want words unless it's a Beyonce track.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. That's a whole fact. You know, Brent, I wanted to rewind a little bit because you mentioned when you got a publishing deal. For the artists out there that might not be familiar with that, can you explain what is a publishing deal?
Well, at the time that I got one, that publishing deal was with my label, and it was very much needed at that point in my career because an advance for a record really wasn't going to pay any bills. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there was much of an advance at that time. So, and it was also, you know, it was the biggest indie label in the U.S., but it was still an indie label. It's not like, you know, this is a major deal or something. So I got kind of a stipend out of that that publishing deal. But to answer your question, the publishing deal technically is the label and their sync division at the label, or I guess that would have been my A&R. She was VP of soundtracks at TBT. They would then shop the tracks or pitch the tracks to different movie projects and TV shows. So, you know, I guess back in the day, I had never heard the term sync agent, and I actually didn't even start hearing that until, I don't know, maybe the last 10 years or so. But back then, I guess maybe that was the term. We still called it sync, but... And maybe it's because I wasn't on the market looking for a sync agent. I had a label deal, but they were my sync agent. So that was giving up the publishing on the track in order to get that upfront money.
Gotcha.
Which I needed at the time. Nowadays, there's no reason to give away your publishing. Unless there's a really good reason. And of course, and maybe you could speak more to this more coherently than I am, but if you're, you know, you're signing a publishing deal with a major publisher outside of like a label deal or as an independent artist or whatever, then you're probably getting a sizable advance in order for them to administer your publishing and to take the publishing side of your royalties and your performance royalties. And they're also going to be pitching your tracks, though. And you're probably going to be rewriting tracks for them, for other artists. Something I would have probably done back then if I was more of informed. I wasn't.
Yeah. You know, what they say, knowledge is power, right, bro? It's like, you know, the more you know.
There's nothing also wrong with learning along the way. Everybody does. There's a whole lot of fake it till you make it going on in every industry.
That's it. That's it. You know, we call it on the job training, bro. You know what
you
I mean?
You know, some things you can't learn until you just spend time doing it and being your head against the wall, and you either figure it out on your own, you're open enough to accept the truth of the situation, or you're knowledgeable enough to understand just exactly how things work. And I learned a lot of my knowledge of how the industry works, and the music industry has got all these different lanes. It's, you know, it's really wide, from, you know, publishing to management to the recording industry to you know, even in like the trailer music world, there's like this little niche of a niche a friend of mine described it as. You know, it's in the sync world, but it's very small actually, and very narrow, and has different language, a lot of the basic tenets are all the same, you know, writers, royalties, publishing royalties, synchronization, all that stuff. But it's its own little thing. So anyway, got this really, really big thing, and it's a lot for anyone if you're just coming into it. It doesn't matter if it's the late 90s, early 2000s like me, or if you're a kid coming up, you know, writing music on their laptop, using CapCut with TikTok, or making YouTube tutorials or whatever. You're still coming in with, like, you know, not a lot of knowledge, and it's a lot to keep up with, but I think anybody who can, and you probably understand this too, Brian, you could speak to this as well, but anyone who survives in as a creator, as they're calling them now, but as an artist, as we called ourselves back in the day, and I think we should still take that back. We're not content creators, we're artists.
Yeah.
Anybody who survives for more than 5 years and can use to make that sacrifice to stay in any of the lanes in this wide, deep industry is going to figure it out. And they're going to figure it out because they're clearly tenacious, because it ain't easy.
Yeah.
It ain't easy. There's not a rule book. And, you know, in some ways it looks like it's harder and harder for younger people, and for older people. You know, you got to be ready to pivot at all times. But hey, life is a game; it's meant to be played. There's no guarantees in anything. So, you know, I'm not worried. But you know, I'm in for the long haul at this point. There's no going back. But if you can make it past, you know, if you already make the sacrifices to live the weird lifestyle that it takes to be a creator nowadays and navigate the industry, there's not just success to be had there and you know, more than a middle class lifestyle, if you're not just talented but driven. But there is more, most importantly, I would say, there is great deep fulfillment. I wouldn't trade my story for anything. I don't feel I figured anything out in any reasonable, sensible way until within the last 10 years of my life, and I've been doing this for, you know, over 25 years. So, and maybe that's being really judgmental about my own story, but I'm definitely honoring it. You know, it took me longer by my own estimation, but I now realize that, hey, it just took me the time that it took. It's my
story.
That's
right.
And I'm not changing. Right. I can't and I won't.
Yeah. You know what? That makes me think of a saying where they say, you know, every overnight success story took at least 10 years. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, people see successful people and they automatically make the assumption that they just made it overnight because they see them in their glory, but they don't necessarily understand their story. It's like, okay, you know, wow, you got this placement in this movie and you got this placement on this major television network and you're making all this money, but they don't see all the work that goes into it in terms of, you know, getting the briefs, actually creating the tracks, the turnaround time. You know, sometimes you might have to make revisions. Sometimes the revisions might need revisions. So it's so much that goes into it. So to your point, it's like, you know, and I always tell people, you know, don't let the internet fool you because everybody's not posting their losses, right? So it's like, you know, you can see people and they'll say, hey, you know, I got this placement, but they're not going to post about the other five that they got rejected on, you know, or they didn't get, or they got overpassed, you know. And I think people can get caught up in that social media thing, you know, everything's glossed over and everybody wins, but that's not reality. So to your point, it's like, yo, run your race, you know, everybody runs their race and your timing is your time and nobody can block your blessing, you know?
Oh man, that is so well said. You should have a podcast.
look, Brent, I do.
Oh, I forget where I am sometimes. Dude, no, that was perfectly said. There is a, when I started my path in the trailer world, there was, part of it was just because I'd already been in production for almost 20 years at that point from when I was very young. I mean, it was to me that side of like doing sound design and structuring a track, and that was all stuff I'd been doing, so that part seemed easy. I mean, I did have to learn how to learn what was expected sonically and what trailer editors were looking for and where they would cut based on not just what they're seeing visually, but because they're cutting to the BPM of your track generally in a lot of cases. You know, they want to see certain things within the track. And also, they'll want to hear, they'll want to see, they'll want the. They'll respond to the track based on the entirety of the track as a piece of music, not just as a collection of, a bunch of collection of sounds. Mm-hmm. So, but those aren't things that I knew or could know, or that really anyone could even tell me until I got some tracks placed and I could see how they were using my music, and that process took a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, in that window of time when I was... when I was kind of like, I felt like I was banging my head against the wall a bit, because I got kind of like I got kind of rug pulled a little bit, pull something from the investment world. I got kind of rug pulled by myself, I think, because the first track I did got placed like immediately.
Wow.
And then I was like, great, let's go, let's do more. And then it was like dead quiet for a long time, and I was doing lots of tracks like, what is happening, what happened? So is it me, am I doing this wrong? And no one could really tell me. In fact, I love this is hilarious too. My publisher, the primary one I was working with at the time, and for those watching, pursuant to the earlier point about what is a publishing deal, in the trailer music world, we have publishers which do act as publishers in the traditional model, but they're also essentially labels for, mm-hmm. I mean, some of them do release these records that they create, and without getting too deep into the weeds of how the trailer world works, and we can talk about that, but essentially, in a lot of cases, you're making a record that you're giving to one of the 300-ish trailer music houses, many of which, or most of which, are in the LA area. And that record is a compilation of different composers' work in a specific genre, a specific lane within trailers, like, let's say, you know, modern horror or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then the music supervisors are looking through I don't know why they're looking through records. They're not an actual vinyl, but you know what I'm saying. They're looking at the tracks, looking at the playlist, the disco playlist or whatever, and they're picking the tracks. But my publisher that I was working with and giving my tracks to, with whom I got that first placement, I'm giving him more tracks, and he's like, this is great. I'm like, can you just tell me, like, what am I missing a beat here? Like, what do I need to do to give you what the trailer houses need so that the tracks are getting placed, please? And he was like, just keep sounding like that Brent Daniels guy. And I'm like, I realize now what a vote of confidence that was. I appreciate, I really, in retrospect, really appreciate that. And I think I maybe understood that at the time. Probably not, though, because I was more like, oh my God, do I need bigger drums? Am I, you know, because I'm looking for the thing, like, I'm doing this thing here. Is this the thing? And I knew I was doing, like, you know, what he was saying was just keep being myself. And it turns out that while I need to hit every one of these beats sonically and nail a structure and give the trailer houses and the music soups and the editors what they're looking for in terms of the track and its contents, I also need to have a percentage of uniqueness that is just my sound, that just seems to attract the ears of the music supervisors and the trailer editors. I mean, it's definitely got to be, like, also, you got to nail the format, but they hear a lot of music every day, so you have to make sure that you are winning their ears over, which is tough to do when they hear everything. So
it's true.
That was good advice from him that I didn't understand. that I now appreciate so much more as someone who's gotten not just from within the trailer world, but just from the word go at like 10 years old, playing on a piano. I so much more now appreciate the process of making music, of expressing myself within it, because it's been just terrorizing for decades. You can't, you know, you can really terrorize yourself. It's when you set the bar high, which it's mm-hmm. like when you make people your peers in your head, like you know, Prince. And I grew up in Minneapolis, so I was a huge mm-hmm. Prince fan. And, you know, in order to get good, it's like, I want to shoot three-pointers like Michael Jordan. You make Michael Jordan your peer in your head. That's how you become successful at anything. If he can do it, I can do it. There's another layer you get to. Yeah, right?
That's a fact.
That feels too ballsy to say initially, but, you know, mm-hmm. at the outset, like, I want to be like that. I want to do like what he or she or they are doing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. That's terrorizing. That's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. And I don't feel like I kind of let up on that pressure until kind of recently, actually. You know, it's like, get comfy with your creative process. Enjoy what you're doing. This is your life. Live in the moment doing it. You're still mm-hmm. expressing yourself when you're doing it. And hey, it's, you know, actually fun. That's why I put that on my wall 10 years ago.
Hey, that's fire.
Remind myself, fire. Dude. This is fun. Anyway, long story short, that was not a short story. But long story short, dude, like, when he gave me that advice, I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to get a placement here, and I'm like, burning the midnight oil because I get these tracks done, and that's what he came back with, and I appreciate why he said that. At that same time, I did then see, of all things, an Instagram meme from some music channel, which I screenshot because it was so impactful, and it's what you were just saying for the listeners who have now tuned out after my long diatribe. And it was an image of a stick person digging, you know, for jewels, diamonds or something, and then that person, that stick person, is looking over at the thing at the other stick person. Digging for jewels.
Compare.
And that person dug up a jewel and then walked off. And the first stick person throws down their shovel, they keep the shovel, they walk away from their present hole, and they go over to where the person was digging. And in the picture, you can see where that first person was digging, there's jewels
right there.
Right there. With this stuff right digging. There. So right that's there. Persistence. That's honor your own sound and your own path. That's be yourself musically. That's forge your own artistic identity. That is honor your own story. There's so much in that ridiculous IG meme that, you know, it changed a part of my path and really stuck with me. And now I'm talking about it on your amazing, what is this called? Podcast.
That is fire, bro. That is fire. And you know what? That speaks volume because I was having a conversation with some artists too, and talking about the power of your voice and the power of being unique. And even when you look at like a lot of successful people, like when you look at Kanye West, to see that his first album, this is a guy who was rapping about college. Nobody ever did that before, right? And talking about how he had this piece of paper that he spent so much money for after 4 years of college, and he couldn't even get a job. He's working at the Gap. Or you take someone like Marshall Mathers, one of my favorite rappers, and he's talking about his drug use. He's talking about his tumultuous childhood growing up, his relationship issues, and his perspective, right? And then, you know, it's like you get all these guys who have these unique perspectives, and the stuff that they talked about, it wasn't discussed before, but because they stayed true to who they are, these guys blew up larger than life. And there's a message in that. You know, that's a gem within itself. It's like, run your race because you're unique. And at the end of the day, like, your sound is unique, your style is unique, and you could be that next standard, you know? And I always say, like, you know, to people, don't get discouraged because you see other people that are successful. If anything, there's always room for greatness. There's always room for greatness, right? It's like if LeBron James said, well, damn, there's a Michael Jordan already, I'm not going to play ball, we wouldn't have LeBron James, right? Or if, you know... Right. You know, if Steph Curry said, "Ah, man, there's a Reggie Miller, man. He's out here lighting it up with these three-pointers on the Pacers. I ain't going to shoot." So there's always room for greatness. There's always room for the level up. You just got to stay consistent and believe in your vision and your path and continue down that. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, I absolutely know what you're saying, and that was really well said. And I love the Kanye example. It was a really great example of that. I heard I was listening to someone recently retelling the story of his rise early on, and when he wrote that track in after his car accident, and he was in the hospital.
Through the wire.
They were saying, like, you know, that could almost be cringe, you know, the earnestness of that track and lyrically what it contains, but that's what made it work. And that is like, there isn't a better example of being true to yourself and being yourself. And, it's really hard though to, man, it's gotta be hard for kids growing up in the social media world too, because it's really hard when you already have a lot of, you feel like everyone is looking at you. I mean, they literally are when you release something, and especially nowadays with the comment culture on whatever platform, you know, I'm so glad it didn't exist. And this isn't helpful for anyone coming up now, but I'm glad it didn't exist when I was coming up.
Yeah, it was different,
Oh my God, because, you know, no one was hearing what I was doing. I was already my own worst critic, so I didn't need an army of people going, you suck.
Yeah, you suck.
And you know, and definitely, some things can be cringy, and hey, every producer, artist has got to develop a sense of taste. That's part of the job. So fine, you're allowed to be cringe to a point, and you know, don't release the cringiest stuff. Maybe run it by someone first. I had some really cringy stuff that was pointed out to me, and I'm glad it was. In retrospect, I'm glad I didn't release it. That said, that mentality is very oppressive when you take it to the natural place it goes as an artist or a creator, where you don't release anything because it's not ready yet. Mm-hmm. Dude, you know, some things are never finished. And if any of us waited until we were ready before we... Hey, put your best foot forward, absolutely. If you're approaching a publisher, don't approach them until your track sounds like a trailer track. Until it sounds like a Hollywood trailer, don't approach a publisher, because they hear stuff every day and you want to make a good first impression. You're going on a date? Dress for the occasion.
That's a fact.
Okay? You know, don't be a work in progress in dressing. However, in life, it's a process. So, you know, what you think might not be good enough, a TV show, a music soup at a TV show, or a A&R person at a label might think is brilliant. And you can talk to, I'm sure you know this experience, my friend. Mm-hmm. Talk to anyone who's been licensing their tracks for a good number of years, and they'll tell you their biggest licensing track, their golden egg from their goose, their artistic goose, is something they hate, or is like, I can't believe that track got licensed. It's blows up in Brazil every December, and I have no idea why they like that track. Meanwhile, the thing that they slaved over and they think is like, I am like, you know, this is my masterpiece, is nothing. Crickets from the sync world. So
it's true.
You know,
it's true. Yeah, it's like you never know what's gonna be that thing. So it's like, you know, to your point, it's like, you know, just for artists, just stay creative, just stay open-minded too, and be flexible. Like, you know, don't be closed-minded to the possibilities. Sometimes you can take a chance on something and it blows up, you know? Like, so definitely, man, that's you spot on with that, bro. You spot on with that.